Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Productivity Mastery. I'm very excited this morning. First of all, I just got home from one of my favorite business conferences slash festivals called 15 Seconds, where I got the chance to talk to a lot of great people and to host a panel on a topic of the imposter syndrome. Very interesting what happened out there. And so I'm back home now, and I'm really excited because my guest today is excited about the same topics I am. Greta Lempel is an HR manager, an HR professional for over 20 years, working with some really important companies and brands. And currently she's an HR manager at Petrocan. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
There you go. And we're going to talk about HR practices, how to be an effective HR leader, to grow and thrive as an HR leader in 2023. Greta, how are you this morning? How's Copenhagen?
I'm good. Thank you, Stoyan. Thanks for the introduction. Copenhagen this morning is at its finest, a few clouds and a little bit of sun. So we won't melt and we won't drown. So that's positive.
And you did have around 6 weeks of no rain. Is that true?
We did. Yes, it did. And we loved it, I must admit. I mean, it to finally be able to sit in our gardens or on our patios and terraces and just enjoy the beautiful sky, because I mean, as you know, in Denmark, it doesn't get dark in the summertime until around 11. And so we really can enjoy a full day outside.
I'm sure you can. So Greta, you've been in HR role since 2005, working for companies such as Carlsberg, Trustpilot, Tradeshift, and I can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any differences in the way the leadership cares for people in the different cultures that you've been a part of?
For sure. And as you mentioned, Carlsberg, as one of the great leaders in just the Danish world of business, they have a good 150-year history. So they've had time to practice. They've had time to perfect leadership. And also, I mean, they had probably one of the biggest HR departments that I've been part of. And that was just for the Danish group. So there's resources, of course, and there's opportunity to try out things and to be brave and bold. Tradeshift and Trustpilot, different sizes, different maturity. They both startups of about 12 years or so. So that's you know, the classic where it's a developer who has a good idea, and who gets started on building a business. But essentially, the core competencies do not lie in building businesses; they lie in building a product that can be, you know, used by everyone. So that whole journey of becoming a leader of your own company has also been really, really interesting to see these characters unfold pretty much before our eyes.
Very interesting. And I guess that's also something for the aspiring HR leaders who might be watching and listening right now and trying to figure out what should be my next move. Yeah. Like, should I join an established organization where they have all these practices? But probably it's a little bit more structured as opposed to having more space to experiment in this kind of more like startups or scale ups.
Yeah, for sure. But and some companies have it all very well carved out and just have taken one model fits all and try to roll that out. And other companies, they have kind of the let's see what works. So from that perspective, yes, as if you're going into to HR, it's worth looking into, what is that model before joining. Because for me personally, starting out, I was very happy to be in a very structured place with very tried and tested processes. Because then you kind of get them embedded into your system, and then you can see, okay, this works here, that works there. And then as you mature yourself and as you become more experienced, then you have favorites, obviously. And then that's when you start bringing things to the table. That's when you start contributing with, maybe a bit of critical sense, which I think is very important when it comes to HR, that we don't just rinse and repeat, because then we won't really get anywhere with the projects that we set up.
And as a HR leader, and obviously having a great professional network around other HR leaders, what do you find are some of the biggest challenges for HR leaders in 2023?
Well, I think coming down, back down from a pandemic where we had to transition like that, and still be able to convince our leaders that it actually wasn't that bad, that we didn't lose momentum, that we didn't have any drop in productivity and such, to convince the top leaders, to convince the C-suite that we actually still have a bag full of tricks that we can use. I think that's still a big challenge for some leaders. They still want to go back to the way things were. That's just not an option. You can never go back. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is to say, okay, this is now actually the new normal. This is what we've established. We've tried it now. We've had 2 to 3 runs of a yearly HR cycle that incorporates both remote and hybrid and workforce on demand and such. So the challenge is to keep pushing that this is the new way forward.
And what would be your thoughts when it comes to designing a workplace model? I have a lot of conversations with executives, with leaders from
Yeah.
different industries, and everybody's asking me, how do I design the right kind of workplace model so we do not sacrifice productivity, right? Like, we want to get things done, we want to be efficient and productive, but also, and this is what the conscious leaders do, of course, also people feel like they are taken care of. So where should people start? Imagine there are as many HR leaders listening to the podcast right now, like looking for a perspective.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't have the solution, because I think we're all scrambling to find that ideal constellation of, what works. Is it 2 days home, 2 days at the office? Is it, is it work from anywhere? What is the model that actually is most optimal? And it obviously it depends on industry and business size, and then very much the culture. Have you been very, very clear on what your company stands for? Because then it is easier to maybe open up to more remote work, because people will have a sense of belonging and a sense of being taken care of when they know that that is, for instance, the credo of HR. Could be that we care for all our employees. So the ideal model, haven't found it, but I do believe that we are being pushed by the workforce to be more flexible, to be have even more options for work from anywhere, work the amount of hours you want, work on the projects you want, and maybe even going as far as saying, okay, you get paid by task, instead of having FTEs, you start maybe having projects that people can bid into. Just by saying it, I get a little bit scared, because how then do you control? How do you manage performance? How do you ensure that we have succession plans? How do you make retention plans? All this, I just think, has been thrown up in the air. And we're now, as HR leaders and HR professionals, trying to catch whatever we can catch and say, okay, this we can actually put into a process, this we can put into a framework, and so on and so forth. But right now it's up in the air, and it's super exciting because it gives us a lot of opportunities, and it gives us opportunities to, expand our search for staff. Because I mean, in Denmark, we're very, very privileged. We have virtually no unemployment, but the downside of that is that we can't find people. We cannot find enough people to fill the tasks that we have. So, but that opens up for looking elsewhere and outside of our own borders.
Do you see a tendency in the Nordics where you operate for companies to search for talent internationally, not just searching for having them to allocate, but also searching for remote workers internationally?
Yes, I do see that. And there's been quite a shift because I think maybe 10 years ago, we were looking for software developers. And then, I think every tech company has had some sort of hub in India. Then it became Eastern Europe. And now it's opened up to a lot of other places. And as the development we've seen in India is that we don't just need a lot of, software developers, we also actually have super skilled ones. That we have the ones who could, design an infrastructure or what it might be, that their skill set has also grown. So we have, in that sense, we have a lot more to choose from than we did just 10 years ago. So when it comes to freelance, I think, I don't know where the untapped market is because I think we've searched high and low and bit everywhere. It might be somewhere as remote as Fiji. I don't know if their internet connection could supply, but I don't know. But it's just I think we've explored where it is that we can find good people, and I think we've managed to find a lot of good staff around the world.
And when you do you have any additional assessments, let's say, for remote workers? And what I mean is, when you hire somebody in an office, right, there is a specific way you operate. You can see them, you can have conversations. And when you are a remote worker, at least from my experience, you need to have certain set of skills, for example, self-management, discipline, a specific way to communicate that you need to be really good at as an employee. Do you do that as well? Like, when you are about to hire for a remote position, have some special measures?
But that's where it's become super tricky because the way to see, okay, do we have consistency is to set up several interviews. But people nowadays, they don't want several interviews. They want one, and they want to be told, okay, you're the person that I want to hire. So then you have to maybe ask some of those tricky questions that get the reflections going and say, okay, well, how do you actually prove that you have time management? Yeah, okay, you joined the interview on time, thanks. But that should be the basic standard. So how do you ensure that these people are comfortable working alone, are good at self-management, are resilient, all these things. So it's for me, it's about maybe having two or three interviews, so you can see, is there a consistency in responses? Is there a consistency in the face that meets you? I mean, we've had cases where people have had their eyes off camera reading, their notes, and I was like, where are you? I mean, where is the person I'm talking to? And then trying to kind of flip the plot completely and just ask a random question about, I don't know, garden gnomes or something like that to kind of, okay, see a reaction, see where's the person behind all of this. But I mean, I have to say, we did a lot of recruiting. I was working in a headset company at the time of the pandemic, so we were busy. And obviously, we needed to hire lots and lots of people, and it could only be done online. So ensuring that these people had what it took to go out and sell the product, develop the product, everything. I mean, it was a challenging time for me, and my creativity was really put to the test in assessing, okay, do we dare take this leap? And even hiring for management remotely. I mean, where you've only met the person on a screen. That takes a leap of faith. But we were successful, I would say. And also remarkably, these remote hires had lower attrition than the face-to-face ones. So, you know, maybe there's some learnings from that we can take with us going forward.
I think the funniest thing was when the quarantine pandemic, you know, time was kind of over and we could go back to the office or meet people during a team offsite, and then you see the new Martin guy that you always saw on the screen, but it's like, oh my God, I didn't know you're so tall. and I'm just yes. brings me to it was really challenging, right? But now many people still do not see each other because they probably operate from different countries, and they only see each other on the screen, sometimes without a camera, right? Because people don't want to put their camera sometimes. But the question here is onboarding. And I know it's not an easy question, but like, how do we onboard remote employees?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a huge challenge, because do you then say, okay, in order to get the culture embedded, you need to come to the office 5 days a week for the first 3 months. Okay. But then you're also asking your permanent staff or the more tenured staff to do the same thing, because otherwise who's this person going to learn from? So it's really, really difficult. And I was thinking about our young people. You know, culture is online for them. They communicate via the Snapchat and all these different platforms, and they kind of seem to get it. They have new kids in the class. They get embedded into the culture. And I'm kind of thinking, okay, what is it that they know how to do that we don't? I think it's, okay, they're open. And they're just, you know, their frontal lobes are flapping about the place, and they're just learning as they go. But the culture, they are very, very, you know, the music they listen to, the movies they watch, the books they read shape what culture they subscribe to. And I think it could be the same for companies if they were clearer on, you know, their value proposition. What is it that we stand for? You know, is it diversity and inclusion? Is it, you know, green, you know, green transitions? Is it constant change? What shapes our culture? What does it mean to be a participant of company X, Y, or Z? And I think if companies become clearer on that, I think you can hire remotely, and people can be fully remote from day one, if you've been very, very clear on what it is you are as a company.
Is it the responsibility of the HR leaders of a company, or it's the responsibility of the executives and the leadership to make culture a priority?
I think that's a joint force. I think we cannot have executives in ivory towers, you know, believing one thing about their company and the reality is another. I think we need to bring the executives way closer to the business. I see a lot of disconnect. I see a lot of not really understanding what goes on the floor, so to speak, because they are protected to a certain extent by middle management. There's a censorship that goes on. I don't know if it's willingly or not, but it just seems like they are a bit more protected. And we did have that one, you know, what if, okay, we have to shut down, we're sending everybody home, but then I won't be able to know if they're working or not. Well, no, but if they weren't, you know, if they weren't working when they were in the office, you know, why would that change when we send them home? And vice versa, if they were productive working in the office, why would they suddenly stop? You know, people are inherently good, and they're adults, and they have a sense of responsibility. And I think a lot of people, if they choose a job for their passion, you know, like you and I have, I don't think there's anything to worry about. And I think that passion also breeds a culture of, you know, this is how we do, and you know, that we bring each other together, that we're inclusive, that we communicate, and, you know, maybe even go to that whole fail fast and move on mentality. So that you have a psychological safety. It's okay to be the new guy and not know everything because it's fine to reach out. I think having more and more of that vulnerability in the workplace and just being able to say, hey, I don't know this. Can you help me? I think that will breed a culture that is much more important than just stating on paper what it is that we do.
And you're absolutely right from my experience working with many organizations internationally and leading my own team. I can only confirm it's all about getting the right people on board. Like when you have people who are motivated, who are responsible, it doesn't matter if they work from home. I'm privileged and grateful to have a team now around people who are motivated, who take ownership, who manage me sometimes when I'm too busy and I need to maybe deliver something to them and I'm kind of late, right? So it's really about getting the right people on board, but that's also one of the biggest challenges in 2023, as you also mentioned. So let's talk about talent attraction. What are employees looking for more and more in 2023? And if we kind of had this traditional HR hat, what do we have to pay attention to even more?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I mean, from my experience, I see that there's like this maybe worldwide burnout. The people are just fed up, they're tired, and they want to be able to call the shots themselves. So I think we're looking at something called maybe is it, hyper flexibility from our part? Just being able to give employees exactly what they want. Is it work from wherever? Is it, being surf chasers or sun seekers or what it might be? That is what they're asking more and more. And the main restraints there are pretty much the tax systems in the various countries, that we can't just give that freedom because where does the tax fall? So I think we may also need to get the various tax systems up to 2023 level before we can actually offer these things that people really, really are demanding. And it is freedom, and it is to be able to have time with your children when they're small, and then work later on in the evening. It's to be able to take care of I don't know a spouse or an elderly parent. So it's very much back to being people-centric and back to the families, back to the communities. And that's a wonderful development, because I think we can agree that ego kind of took a little took off for a while there. So getting back to just to the roots of humanity and what really matters, and that is that that as long as we're happy and that our basic needs are fulfilled, we deliver. If we feel like we have management that trusts us and is interested in our growth as well as our well-being, we deliver. So I guess we've also seen from some of the remote data that has come out that they tend to overperform. The people who are fully remote, they overperform again and again. And so with that in mind, we can't keep saying, we need to get them back to the office. We need to get them back to the office. No, not necessarily. We might to rethink office structures. We might have to turn them into maybe cozy hotel lobbies that invite for more collaboration and conversation. Because that's where we are great. I mean, we're not great from sitting in open office spaces listening to two colleagues yap on about their dogs and three others discussing whether the coffee machine is good enough. So I think there's a lot to be said for trying to reinvent ourselves as HR leaders. And push the envelope a bit. Make sure that what we're seeing demand-wise from talent is what we have to deliver on. And if the talent is the right fit, and if we hire the right people, and it's pretty easy, but we're not there yet, so it's not easy yet.
And in that perspective, in that context, what do you think should HR leaders do in terms of maybe you have some examples in terms of maybe shifting a little bit, tweaking the way the whole hiring process is being set? I mean, maybe the way you do the copy for the job ad, or like the process of the interviews, like what are some things that you now, if you can reflect, maybe have changed in the past 3 years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is definitely it's you have about 5 seconds to grab a potential candidate's attention. So it's about being really fast. So you cannot start with the whole history of the company before you get to the point. Right. And they're usually on their phone. So it has to be really quick and swift. And basically, you have to do clickbait titles so people will want to read more. And even, I mean, going to making small videos instead, since, you know, when people are commuting or whatever it is they're doing, they always have their phone. So using the digital media a lot more than we do, I think, is one of the things that we've seen successful outcomes from. 'Cause the traditional, the classic job advertisement, you know, 10 bullets about what is it we expect from you, what is it you can expect from us. Yeah, it's fine, but it has no flavor, right? So it doesn't really show who we are. And I think that's what people want more and more, is to say, okay, well, we actually donated to Save the Whales, and we have an office here, but it doesn't really matter because you can work from anywhere. It's really about sort of kicking the culture, the values, kicking them into gear and seeing, are we a match?
Do you have a different approach in that regard when you have to hire the so-called Gen Z, right? Like the young ones, as opposed to you need to hire a senior manager? Or do you think that currently everybody is expecting a more modern way to be approached?
I think Gen Z is expecting a more modern way. I think when you look for senior management, I think we need to disrupt a little bit more in that group, but they still expect to see the list, the bullet points, and they still expect to be able to tick everyone off and say, okay, I will apply and I will ask for my premium salary. I'll ask for the usual package. I'll even ask for pension, you know, all these things that we're kind of looking into, but is that what we need to deliver? Is this what people want? Or should we just give them a big bag of money and then they can distribute it to whatever needs they have? So there's that part of it. And then there is, you know, how to attract Gen Z. It has to be quick and swift and efficient and really, you know, very aggressive. Whereas for the senior manager, you kind of want someone who's going to help with the change, who's going to help with the transition, who's going to be on board with the new organizational design. So maybe trying it out, and that being first step of the talent assessment, is how do they respond to the way that we attracted them? And if that's, you know, billboards or advertisements on buses, you know, anything of that extent, you know, it's worth a try just to see, you know, it depends on the company, of course, but just to see what is the outcome. And again, it's all about failing fast and then moving on, right? Because different people will react to different ways of being approached. And that's the only given we actually have in talent attraction.
And thank you for sharing this and emphasizing on it. I know this is kind of like a common sense, but I can also imagine many professionals, because we are so busy with so many things, sometimes we tend to automize, right? Mm. We have this ad, let's just do the same one, the same process, and put it out there. And what you're saying is, well, we need to pay attention to the generational differences. We need to pay attention to who we're talking to, not just the generation or the age, but also what is the kind of position? Is it more creative? Mm. Is it more, you know, engineer or something that they prefer bullet points? I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm not an HR manager, right? But yeah. I would imagine that makes a difference.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely spot on. I mean, we were looking for a lot of creatives, and there are ads were not creative enough. On the other hand, we were also looking for a lot of software developers, and our ads were way too advanced. I mean, way too, yeah, way too fun and light. So, you know, it's striking that balance. And then it's again, do you write your ad to reflect who you're looking for, or do you write your ad to reflect your company values to attract the right people? So it's, and as a company, you should encompass, you know, everyone. You should be able to have that stretch across across professions. So how do you you know, position yourself as an employer when it comes to all these different types that you want to attract? Could say, come to the place where we accept everyone, but that's what everyone is doing through diversity and inclusion. So it truly is a battle to find the right profile and to give the right story about who you are as a company, as an employer. And, you know, what is it that the HR department, because we are kind of like the gatekeepers of a company, because that's the first face that potential candidates they meet is HR. So if already there, they're thinking, they don't know what they're doing, or, oh, this is so 1980s, or, you know, whatever it might be, then we've lost before we've even begun the recruitment process. So there's so many elements to take into consideration when you look for staff and you look for, you look for the right fit. Also, because you don't, knowing that you want to attract Gen Z, you can't just change the DNA of the company to accommodate Gen Z. I mean, you have to be honest, you have to be authentic. And if you're not, that shines through like a sore thumb immediately if it's not authentic. So it's also about, you know, really being honest about what are we and what are we not. And if companies are not flexible and if they're not into hybrid, they should just say it. Because there are still people who want to work fully in an office, right? There's still people who do want that traditional remuneration package of a base salary and a bonus and a personal bonus and a pension. And, you know, so all this it has to be taken into account. So that's why, you know, recruitment starts a good couple of months before you actually post a job ad, to be completely clear on, you know, the needs and wants.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. As you said a couple of times already, it's about the authenticity when it comes to culture. It's about the authenticity. Like,
yeah,
too many companies are trying to come up with the perfect list of values. Like, they sound great on paper, but then when you ask anybody from the employees, they'll say, I don't know. Or they might be able to quote the values, to cite them, but they don't know what they mean, right? Yeah. And the first step is really to understand who you are, to put the resources into how do we articulate these values and behaviors that we want each of us to be standing for across the organization. So we actually live them. And when we are about to attract somebody new, we convey what we stand for, who we are, and who we are not. Mm-hmm. And some people will not like us, and that's okay. They're probably not a good fit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's about, because, I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's been very much job takers market for a long, long time. So companies have had to compromise a lot of things, among others, their values. And it's just resulted in high attrition. You know, it hasn't really turned into anything positive. So, I mean, it's all about the authenticity. And, I mean, we've seen these, we did a values rollout many, many years ago. When I was in Maersk. And it's a heavy duty company, and they've got tens of thousands of employees. And some of them have been employed since they were 16 years old. And they're sitting there in their 40s thinking, what is going on? What are, why values? We know what we stand for. Yeah, but the younger generation did not. So there was a lot of pushback as to why do I have to take 3 days out of my busy schedule to go on an offsite to learn about the values. But that's as much because these people who have been there since they were 16 were the culture bearers. And I think figuring out that that is also a role you take on, I mean, it's an identity if you've been with the company for 30 odd years. Then that's part of who you are. That is your DNA. And then it's up to also up to the company to explain that to people and say, okay, it's not because what you've been doing is wrong or because you have not been living the values. We actually just now need you on board to convey this message to the new group, but to new employees. So it's really a difficult balance to strike because there will be some who don't understand what's the big deal. But they would usually be the culture bearers themselves because they don't know because it's so embedded in them that there's just such a natural thing. So that was interesting for me at least to learn when it came to culture that it was like, what are we talking about? And I guess it's also a reflection on the world becoming more open, and that we have a very, very diverse workforce and colleagues from all over the world. And we all bring our own different culture and our own different set of values. But at the end of the day, when we're in the same companies, usually we tend to morph into one big group of same cultural values, of same understanding. And when they differ, I think it makes for a good conversation.
Yeah, and sometimes you define the values maybe 15 years ago when you were 100 people, and now the company is 4,000 people. It's completely different structure, and the way people operate is different. So you need to come back and relook at the values. I had a great guest on the podcast. Anybody who's listening can check out the podcast with Chris Robbins, who's the CEO of Tele2 in Estonia. It's a telco, and he's owing to value-based leadership, and his approach is in transformation. Transforming a company is starting with the values. All right, I get into a new company. I need to figure out what do we really stand for. That's what's written on the web page or on the HR ads, right? What do we really stand for? And his process is really interesting, by the way. He would go around and talk to everybody for the first few weeks in the company, like the janitor, the HR manager, the IT person, and he would just ask them questions. What do we stand for? Who are we? What do you like about a company? All these kind of things to collect data. But then he will also ask them, all right, if he works for Tele2, he will say, well, Michael, who do you think is a typical Tele2 person? Okay. And then he'll collect these 5, 10 people, maybe 20, that everybody refers to as the Tele2 person. And then what he does is he'll send them to a team offsite with no management, no executives. And he'll say, okay, you guys go and you got to figure out what the values are. And he gives them some suggestions, some process, but they have to come down. And then at the end of this team offsite, they have to present him 3 to 5 values, the most important values of the organization. And of course, the management now can look at them. They can work a little bit on the language articulation, maybe together identify the behaviors that are matching each of the values. But again, he always likes to exclude the executives and just have everybody from different levels of the organization to identify what is our DNA. And I thought it's a really fascinating kind of process that the values are being discovered from inside out.
Yeah,
From
no, I
down.
completely agree. Yeah, that's a brilliant way of doing it. Because you always have, I mean, when we've had opportunities to kind of do small campaigns about the values or what it might be, then you kind of, okay, who's that employee that everybody knows? Right? And there's always a handful, and they're from different areas of the business. Get them together in a room and they can make magic. And we had that for our portrayal a few companies ago of showing the values. And I proudly represented Can Do Attitude, so I'm very happy about that. So it's, you know, that we all have something that we do stand for, and that we can actually say with pride that this is us. You know, this is this group of people. They'll be recognizable in any company, and there's always the ones that, and some companies even, you know, even reward based on, are they living the values? Is this someone who is known throughout the organization? And I think, I mean, that was actually something they did in Trustpilot. Is this person known throughout the organization for living our values? And without a doubt, you had all the leaders saying, yes, I know this person and I agree. Everybody could tick off this one person who had that behavior. I thought that was very interesting. It's also a bit tricky, but you know, it was an interesting perspective that this is something that they want to embed so much that you get rewarded on it. So from my perspective, whenever there's a reward, there might be ulterior motives, but you know, at least I could agree with the person they had chosen here. But so it's interesting that yes, the values, they come inside out, you know. So I completely agree with the approach of just, you know, having those profiles hash it out together.
So anybody who's listening, go check out also the episode with Chris Robbins. A lot of good stuff and practical ideas on how to identify the values, or also realigned with the values in case the organization has grown ever since. And when you mentioned that, I got curious, Greta, when you mentioned some of the practices in Trustpilot. You know, many of the listeners of the podcast are always interested in some practical ideas or strategies. Can you think of some more, or maybe just expand on the one that you just shared in terms of how do we spread the values across? How do we, maybe in Trustpilot, maybe in Carlsberg, what did you guys do to make sure that we are constantly getting back to the values and reinforce people to pay attention and live them?
I mean, it was very different, Carlsberg, to Trustpilot. But I have to say, I think one of the benefits from Trustpilot is that their HR leader actually comes from a Maersk background. So she's got like the visionary, the huge setup in place. So she knows exactly how to navigate HR. And yeah, a really brilliant, brilliant professional within her field. And the thing that was very clear was that onboarding is the make or break. And it was very extensive onboarding, but with several iterations. So you kind of have your 3 days onboarding just from day one. And then after a month, you go back and say, okay, what was it that we talked about? And then the values are repeated. And then after 3 months, after 6 months, so you kind of keep having a small check back with what you learned during the onboarding. And for Carlsberg, they did also a classic onboarding of a week's long presentations, and you kind of at the end you think who's who, and but still some things kind of stick. And then after a year, then you get invited to a refresher. That's at least what they did back then. So and that also has a nice effect of, you know, that, oh yeah, we're not forgetting this just because now the, you know, the train has left the has left the building. We still need to repeat these and keep on repeating them so people don't forget that that is what we stand for. So, and you know, as you say, referring back to your colleague Chris there, I mean, there's no, I mean, values don't end. I mean, it doesn't stop. You don't just formulate four values and then move on. They have to be relevant. You know, you have to do your housekeeping. You have to make sure that they still make sense in the world of today. So there are, of course, the values that never become irrelevant, you know, but in essence, you want to kind of make sure that they're up to date along with everything else in the company.
I'm so happy you said that. I found this research connected to change management. McKinsey found that companies were five times more likely to have a successful transformation when leaders have role model the behavior changes they were asking their employees to make. five times.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, I mean, and don't get me started on leadership, but that is actually where we want to invest, because a lot of them say, yeah, but I'm a leader. I'm a leader. But it's like, but are you, or are you just copy pasting what you did last time? And if the leaders are authentic, if they dare to show vulnerability and, you know, just be a human, but yes, I wear the executive badge, that, you know, you'll get so many more followers. So as that they say, hypocrites don't get followers. And one of the things is, like, they say, okay, but just for instance, with a performance management or performance rating system, you also see from that McKinsey report that top management very rarely gets rated. You know, they don't have a performance rating. You have about 33% of middle management have a rating, but never top, because who's going to rate them? Who's their colleagues? So I think, I mean, a 360, one of my favorite tools, would benefit, I mean, they would benefit these leaders greatly, because then they would see, okay, do people actually buy into what I say? Do people think that I'm authentic? And I think it's a great check-in for them. And also, forces them to walk the talk. I think in many cases, so they avoid it.
It's so interesting. It's not rocket science. Everybody heard about 360. Everybody knows the, you know, can set up the process, but
yeah,
how many actually doing it? Companies regularly, consistently also measuring the leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just the leadership so easily gets forgotten. Because you also can't tell who's holding them accountable.
I can't tell you how many times, Greta, and I know you do work with organizations also in terms of training and upskilling, but I can't tell you how many times I get hired to do a workshop or a coaching program, or, hey, we need to work on the productivity, on the culture, and they're really happy to get me on board. And then I'm like, are you joining the team offsite? Are you joining the training? And then what the answer I get is, oh, it's for my people.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really great, yeah. But it's for my people. I know this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, interesting. And then when you have the workshop and people start opening up and sharing and you get them on one-on-one, they'll tell you, actually, my challenge is my manager. It's my leader. They're not listening. They're like all the things that we cover during these workshops.
Yeah, it's, no, like, it's
interesting.
True. Yeah, but and the sad thing is that we can sit here and laugh about it, but that's how common it is, you know, that we think, no, it's for my people. Okay, but you are the people. I mean, it's such an interesting perspective, and also having been like a fly on the wall at some of these management offsites, you kind of think, no, I mean, if you're still taking calls and replying to emails, you're not going to get anything out of this. And and they're supposed to also work in it as a team. And I had one of my first experiences was one of those, in Danish we call them rabbit killing courses, where you go into the forest and you have to do an obstacle course and you have to build a fire out of nothing. And, you know, and it's a team building exercise. But you had these very, very fit leaders who would run and leave the less fit behind. You kind of think, but that's not the object here. I mean, that's not the goal. It's not for you to get there first. It's for you as a team to get there together. And, you know, that was in I was in my 20s when I observed this, and I just thought, okay, this is madness. So, you know, there's so much to learn. And obviously, we do know that the profiles who become leaders, they do have that a certain inflated ego. They have drive, they've got passion and a bit of aggression, right? And they run and they get things done. But getting things done as a team, that's a different story. So it's super interesting to see that this. I mean, it just still holds true that these personality types need a bit more help with the community sense, the community feeling. And, you know, they have to get away from it's for my people because they are the people. And if they don't lead by example, you know, then there's no authenticity, there's no buy-in, and then you can only go one way.
It's such a relevant point. And as we're talking about the leadership and executive side, I think from observations, the last 10, 15, 20 years, maybe the spotlight has been on the top level management and not as much on the middle management. And the relevance of the middle management is so huge. Having the right people to, I mean, there's so much that's done by the middle management, right? Like they're the group between the top leadership and the teams. And since attracting top talent is becoming more and more difficult, many organizations are promoting internally, right? That's the best. People know the values, they know the culture. However, and I'll give you another research study. DDI conducted research serving 368 CEOs and 2,102 HR professionals and found that the C-suite only rated 38% of their mid-level managers as good, very good, or excellent. Only 38%. So since promoting internally is becoming more and more important, what do we do to upskill our managers or future managers who are maybe really good performers in what they do and you want to promote them, but now they need to step up and be managers and leaders?
Yeah, but that's an excellent question. And that's one of my pet peeves, because I don't believe that everybody wants to be promoted. And I don't believe that management is for everyone. And, you know, I think one of the biggest tragedies, let's just look at Nokia. They promoted excellent developers, excellent radio frequency engineers to leadership. So what happened? You know, it's like they were not leaders. They never had the desire or the build to become leaders. Those who do have excelled, I mean, beyond what we can imagine. But mainly, I mean, software developers, just because they're good at developing does not mean they're really, really good at developing people. So, you know, there's only so much that can be taught, because if there is no will to do it, and sometimes you get caught into that whole structure of, but this is what I'm supposed to say yes to. This is what I'm supposed to think is okay for my progression. You know, then we actually might be destroying more than we're creating. Because for sure, there's lots of people who get promotions into leadership because they can and because they want to. And after all, leaders have to start somewhere. But in many cases, and with the percentage you're just giving, it's just it's the wrong approach to just promote blindly and not to have maybe a specialist route instead of only management.
So what would be the solution? What would be the right kind of approach? Because as you said, it's the natural progression for many. It's often connected to increasing salary when you get promoted. And, you know, if you're a specialist, you might feel like, well, probably I'm not monetizing the opportunity on the one side. On the other side, I'm probably not growing because I keep on, like, how do we solve that?
Yeah. Well, when I figure that out, I'll write the book and I'll sell it. But no, it is one of those, a brain teaser, where it is, how many development tracks should you have? Because aside from the danger of overinflating your own organization and over promoting, there's still a glass ceiling, because the CEO is probably not going to budge, right? And it kind of points into a hierarchy no matter what you do, no matter how flat your organization is. So there has to be different options. So there's like the specialist route could be an option. Then there's also just like a machine room route, because there are some people who just love doing accounting day in and day out for the rest of their lives. We should appreciate them. Love these people. We should appreciate them more. And we should ensure that they also get rewarded for that kind of tenacity. So many more variations on a promotion than what we have currently, I think, is one way to do it.
Do you think we're lagging behind on management and people upskilling?
Yes. Yes.
And I mean management and people skills upskilling, right?
Yeah, but it's just I can't really say that it's through fault of our own. It might
Okay.
be as much as the circumstance that we're in currently. Things have changed really, really quickly these past just 5 years. And it's a human condition with upskilling in management and upskilling in people. That's really, I mean, then we start touching upon psychology, and I mean, I know we touch a little bit upon it in HR, but we don't want to get into, really playing with people's brains to that extent. And you really have to. I mean, there's some layers you need to shed and to truly become, people focused, people centric, and a lot of upskilling to be done there, which starts with working on yourself, which starts with working on daring to be you. Daring to be vulnerable, daring to be crazy, strong, boisterous, all the sides of you. And I think we want to see much more of that in the workforce. No more polished suits. We want to see the diversity, and it comes in all shapes and sizes.
And before we get into diversities, which would be my final question, I just want to dig deeper into that. What are some of the trends when it comes to corporate training? And I mean both when it comes to topics that are relevant and important in 2023. And I want you to emphasize on the so-called soft skills, even though I don't think they are soft skills, people skills, management skills. Both in terms of the topics, but also in terms of the way the training is conducted.
Yeah, I think one of the top things we've seen is for new leaders, how to give feedback. Because sometimes, like we've just spoken about, it can be someone from the same group of people where you promote one, and this person is suddenly actually acting manager to his or her peers. And that can be quite daunting. So how do you take that conversation and say, okay, you're simply not cutting it. What you're doing is not good enough, and still be able to have a coffee on Friday, right? I mean, that's just a very, very sensitive area to put people in, and also to grow in, because you have it's such a sensitive area that you really have to know what you're talking about, and you have to know yourself very, very well to be able to give a kind of uncandid or candid rather a feedback. So really being clear without being brute, it's such a hard balance to strike, but that's one of the requests I've had most of these past couple of years, how to give feedback, how to have the difficult conversation, because it's often avoided. Then it's just sort of can you help me get rid of this person? No, you're a leader, you have to lead. Right? So anybody can be turned around is my firm belief, but you have to want to do it.
It's so interesting that the topics that are most needed are also the ones that are kind of common sense in a way,
Yes.
like giving feedback, the type of topics I get requested to help with as an external consultant and corporate trainer are around the same lines with feedback, communication, time management, personal productivity, stress management and mental toughness. And it's like, shouldn't that be common
Yeah.
sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also about the creating the space for people to talk about these topics. It's not even about so much about the knowledge and the tools, because everybody can read a blog post. It's more about we are learning together and we have a space to share what are we struggling with, and then your colleague can understand what you're struggling with. And there's the team building part. So it's, oh, I have an understanding now. We have a common language. We can give feedback because
Yes.
we that's what we spoke about. So
Yeah.
yeah,
No,
thank you
it's
so much
super.
for sharing.
And it's super relevant what you're saying, that it is very sort of, yeah, this is logical, but so more work for us, I guess.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned diversity, I want to finish there. The past 5 years, I don't know how many times I see diversity on LinkedIn posts, and everybody talks
Yeah.
about diversity, but it's also I see a lot of good practices, and I also see a lot of That's a hot topic. Let's just talk about diversity, but it's not really done the right way. So how do we, I don't even know what's the verb. How do we do diversity and
How do we
inclusion?
Do diversity? Yeah.
How do we do diversity? How do we incorporate diversity and inclusion the proper, non-politically correct, but the right way, so we have more effective organizations that are inclusive?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some who request that you leave out a picture of your application as well as your age. Okay, so that's two factors that we can exclude on. But other people, unfortunately in Denmark, who say that if they have a foreign sounding name, they leave it out of their application and just
really?
Write like J. Smith or something. Yes. And that is terrifying, because that means that we have not done the work we need to do properly. It's awful, to be quite frank. So that's what some people are seeing that they need to do in order to be considered for a position. And, then it's hard to say, oh, yeah, but we're diverse. You don't know which applicants you're getting if this is the case. So it has to be flagged even more. But you cannot sort of go and choose that one person with blue hair over in the corner as your poster child. I mean, you have to have, real diverse workforce, and not looking for the diversity, but always looking for best candidate. And then diversity will come. I mean, we are four people now in the company that I'm currently staffing up in Denmark, and we are as diverse as can be. But diversity is more than age and gender and color. It's also personality profiles. So when you see, okay, diversity on the executive floor, not really. I mean, there may be male and female, various ages, but if you look at their personality profiles, they'd probably be pretty much the same color or same type, all of them. So diversity is just such a broad concept that, unless we have one thing that we do right, which is always hire the most competent person, then we're not going to get there.
Yeah, that was spot on, Greta. That was absolutely spot on. I hope more people are listening to that. Can you maybe, just to wrap up with everything, tell us what is the, not the political correct thing about diversity. Why is diversity not just the right thing, but the effective thing for leaders to do in terms of business results and productivity?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just there. The business results will reflect on whether you have a diverse workforce or not, because you will have people with every angle to a problem will also have every angle to a solution. So, and that's where, that we learn and grow together. I mean, and that is what a community is. If it takes a village to raise a child, it must take a diverse community to build a great company. So, I mean, it will be very, very clear on the bottom line if you have a diverse force and you use the diversity to your advantage. If you find that all this diversity is resulting in more common ground than in differences, or that the differences actually spur on innovation, then you've won. Then diversity is the game changer.
I interviewed the founder of a company called Mela Light. It's a company that just got an exit last year. They sold it for, I think, 90 million euro. They've done a lot of great stuff around culture. Everybody who's listening, you guys can go check out the remote company is the big company that have a few products, one of them, Mela Light. A lot of good stuff out there. But when I talk to Ilma Tiki, who's the co-founder, and I ask her about crisis management, crisis leadership, what are her best advice for leading in times of crisis? She said one thing: have a diverse team. That was not the answer I was expecting, right? But she was like, you need to have a diverse team, because when you do, the solutions will come. If you have the same type of people, you probably can get stuck. But when you have a diverse team in all kind of different dimensions, then you can always be creative. So get a diverse team. And I'm like, oh, that's so good. You know?
Yeah.
So
couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Oh, thank you so much, Greta. Like final question, just to wrap it up. What would be your message to the HR leaders out there that are navigating through 2023? What would be your final message to them?
Throw away the rule book. We're writing a new one. Yeah, it's such a time of disruption that we have to keep our brains open and fresh and really accept anything that comes our way.
Boom. We got it. Greta, where could people find you and get in touch? And potentially, if they need any advice or consultancy, how could people get in touch with you?
They're very welcome to hit me up on LinkedIn. So Greta Lempel. And I reply all my LinkedIn mails. So feel free to reach out.
That's how we're here, right?
That's why we're here.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you have any further questions, make sure to post them in the comments on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed this episode, and if you have a neighbor who's an HR professional, make sure to send them the episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or all other major podcast platforms. Let us know what you think about the Productivity Mastery. Keep listening and see you next time for the next episode of Productivity Mastery. I'm Stoyan, and here is Greta. Ciao. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.